You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back to the Bless You Boys podcast. BlessYouBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. Let's get the show underway. Welcome back. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. I am your host, Brandon Day. With me, my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, how's it going tonight?
Not too bad. Can't complain. Well, I mean, I could. I spend most of my day doing it on Twitter, though, so I probably shouldn't, you know, bring it to the workplace.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Twitter is for, really. That's where everybody goes to complain all day long.
And then get mad when they suffer the consequences.
Oh, sorry, Aubrey Huff. Yeah, well, we can talk about that.
Sorry, not sorry.
Oh, Aubrey Huff. Oh, Lord. Anyway, yeah. At least, you know, despite the fact that the Astros thing just will not stop and actually almost feels like it's gaining momentum still somehow at this point, and we can't avoid it, at least, you know, we have baseball activities. That's what I needed in my life. I needed to see, you know, Miguel Cabrera show up and hear how much, you know, weight he's lost and how great he looks, and I need to see Matt Manning and Alex Fieto and Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal and those guys running around on the backfield.
I was pretty excited to see that Alex Fieto shaved his stupid goatee. That was a really nice sign.
Yeah, I'm
glad to hear that for the fourth year in a row, Jordan Zimmermann is finally healthy.
Yep, the first time he's come to camp healthy.
Yeah, which is, I think it was...
out of four straight tries.
Yeah. Tigers UK, where he pulled up all the tweets from previous seasons, and apparently that exact same thing has been said every year.
Yep. This is the... So, I mean, sports are full of cliches to begin with, but nothing more so than the beginning of spring training comes with such a vast accoutrement of cliche.
They're so good, yeah. Ready to, you know... What was it? Miguel Cabrera was saying something the other day. I loved this quote that was, he was talking about how he watched the World Series and he saw that moment between Anibal Sanchez and Max Scherzer where they're like, we did it. Like, we finally did it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm really hoping to be able to see that in Detroit soon. And I'm like, oh, sweetie.
I know.
The only way you're going to see that in Detroit is if wow. Yeah. I'm like, well, maybe, because you're going to be with the team until we're all 400 years old. But
and that's another part of spring training is that, you know, athletes have got to get themselves in that mindset where they're like, you know, no, you never know what can happen. You know, Ron Gardenhire's out there like, hey, you know, I've seen teams go from worst to first and blah, 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 blah. Everybody's got to feel that way and say it, but it just sounds so goddamn insane at this point that, yeah, it's almost worth just not doing it this year, guys, but okay.
Yeah, it's a worthwhile reminder to point out that they did post a picture of the World Series in the locker room last year saying, if you don't think we can win it, you shouldn't be here, and then they lost 114 games. So,
yeah. I mean, who cares about the World Series anyway? You know, I mean, like Rob Manfred said, it's just a hunk of metal.
It's just a piece of metal. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Okay, so I know we're not going to get into the Astros thing until later, but like, how does the commissioner of baseball actually get out there and say that the commissioner's trophy is just a piece of metal?
Yep. I know. This is the guy who's running the sport. The guy who apparently thinks that, yeah, you know, the World Series is totally overrated.
Yeah, just a piece of metal. Unbelievable. The one thing that these guys are playing for all year, the one thing that the Astros cheated for, and it's just a piece of metal.
Yeah, I mean, unreal. It almost just felt like, you know, like a revealing error in which he basically explained that, you know, I work for the owners and all we give a shit about is the money. So,
yeah,
which we know, but yeah, that's become quite clear over the last few years for sure.
anyway, we'll wait and we'll discuss that more later. But yeah, let's settle to the positives and talk a little spring training. Alex Wilson throwing some sidearm. That's interesting.
Yeah, Alex Wilson now with a master's degree in psychology since we last saw him, and now a sidearm delivery to give guys a different look, and also pulled the 10 times Daniel Norris by rolling up to spring training in a 42-foot giant motorhome.
Yeah, an RV set up about 10 feet away from the literal circus.
Yep, he put it in the parking lot, and apparently the circus set up the very next day. So he was amazing. 10 feet from the pleasant sounds and smells of the local carnival, which is going on there. So that whole Alex Wilson's just always good for some fun that way.
I genuinely think my favorite thing coming out of spring training right now is pictures of Alex Wilson's face. Because I've never seen a grown man look so defeated. It's just, ugh, it's so, I mean, it would be sad if it wasn't just so funny to me.
Yeah, and of course he's not really defeated. He just looks that way.
I think he's kind of always had that kind of face. And I say this as somebody with chronic resting bitch face. Some people just have that face.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex Wilson does have kind of a angry, sort of like slightly miserable look on his face most of the time. And I mean, maybe that's compounded by being out there with a whole bunch of 21 and 22 year olds when you're 32 and watching them run circles around you and laugh and play grab ass and run amok. And you're like,
My realization today when somebody tweeted something about like what age you have to be for seniors tickets, and it's like 60 years old, and I realized that chronologically I am closer to being eligible for senior ticket pricing than student ticket pricing. What a moment.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, but yeah I crossed that bridge a while back, I'm afraid. But yeah, it's weird, actually. I don't want to talk too much about aging, but it is weird to get into your 40s and then you start feeling like all of a sudden you're catching up to your parents all of a sudden, because they've been old now for quite a while. Both my parents still alive, you know, still married together, still doing well for the most part, despite health issues. But yeah, you know, it's like they're not that far away, you know.
My dad. Well, my mom's officially a senior now, but like, yikes, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's just weird how it turns over to where once you reach a certain stage of life, it doesn't sort of matter that much. It's more about are you healthy than what age are you? So definitely hitting on all cylinders there. And yeah, there's got to be some older players and, you know, who come to camp every year and just start just feeling it, you know, just sweating, exhausted after the first day of like light workouts and like, what the hell am I still doing here?
I know that feeling very well.
Yeah. So the Tigers have made a move since the last time we were on the air. We missed last week, but the Tigers signed Cameron Maven. Just a little deal for $1.5 million. Not a bad idea. You know, he was with the Yankees last year. I think he started out with the Indians on a minor league deal, and then the Yankees just had a slew of injuries, picked him up, and he was great there. I think he played about half the season, and what did he hit? 285, 364, 494 for a 127 WRC+.
That's not bad at all.
No, that's great. He would be the leading hitter on the Tigers.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he gave some quotes talking about how, you know, the Yankees sat him down, and God, we wish the Tigers would do this sort of thing, and said, listen, you know, you're 6'4", 215 pounds. We want to see you drive the ball over the fence. You know, we want to see you hitting fly balls. We want to see you hitting deep liners in the gaps. You know, we want to see you taking your hacks. And he took that to heart and hit 11 home runs in, you know, basically less than a half a season of at-bats. So maybe he learned something there about driving the ball in the air a little bit more. But yeah, either way, I mean, it's good to have a veteran in there, I suppose. How did you feel about the signing overall? Does it move the needle for you?
You know what? It didn't wow me by any means, but Maven's kind of like that good clubhouse presence. I think as long as none of the players get too wrapped up in the fact that he was with the Astros in 2017 briefly, that doesn't, you know, get held against him, and I don't know that it would.
He was barely playing.
Come out. Yeah, he barely played for them. I don't think it really impacted his play any. He certainly wasn't one of the masterminds of the entire situation. And he's definitely come out and said, you know, well, shit, it was one of those things. Wish I could have done something different, but didn't. And I don't think that that's going to get held against him. And I hope not. As long as he kind of, I think if he kind of addresses it going into the season with the guys and is just like, hey, like, you know, here's the deal. He's got that kind of great clubhouse vibe to him that I think, especially from a veteran player, could really help some of the young guys get excited for the season, even if it is going to be, you know, a slog.
Yeah, I mean, he's a, yeah, and it, you know, it shouldn't be as much of a slog as it was last year, at least. And I think he does, yeah, bring some leadership for some of the younger outfielders, give them an example a little bit. And, you know, is probably, right from the jump, our best outfielder. So he's also probably going to get to play a decent amount. As far as the Astros thing, I can't even imagine any of the Tigers even care. You know, like, we're so far from anything mattering. I don't know.
It's just a matter of, I think, of how kind of angry most of the, like, we're seeing a lot of anger, I think, in players that don't usually express it. Like, you're seeing the, like, guys like Nick Markakis and Mike Trout, weather-loving Mike Trout coming out and being pretty riled up about it. So I don't know that there's a zero probability that they wouldn't have some hard feelings. But again, because of how far removed I think he was from the situation, by and large, it's pretty hard to be mad at him for it.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, like, it just seems impossible to be mad at him. Like, he had nothing to do with anything, you know? So I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe there will be a conversation too that needs to be had. But yeah, I don't imagine that's going to be any kind of a problem, really.
Not a deal breaker or anything, no.
No, and it, you know, I mean, I don't really think he's going to take away too much. I mean, there is the problem of the Tigers having like 10 outfielders who now don't really have anywhere to play. Not really sure what they're going to do with like Jacob Robson, Danny Woodrow, Jorge Bonifacio, let's see, Troy Stokes, Travis DeMeritt. There's just outfielders all over the place who, you know, are sort of stuck between the guys who are coming up and will need jobs at AAA and are more higher priorities, like Daz Cameron, Derek Hill, etc. But I just don't feel like any of those guys matter, honestly. I can't really see anything being lost by giving some of that playing time to Cameron Maybin, and Travis or Victor Reyes can kind of run around and play a little bit everywhere. Seems like Jacoby Jones is still going to be the starter in center field, even though Reyes was better defensively last year. So I guess that kind of sets up the outfield. And yeah, like, you know, Cameron Maybin is still relatively fast, like, still does some things for you on the base paths. He's just sort of a versatile weapon who can play anywhere in the outfield. And, you know, should produce a little bit. He's kind of learned.
And he's still relatively young, isn't he?
Yeah, like, he's only 32, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, the way the game is going, where unless you're a star, as soon as you turn 30, like, it's all over. There are still, like, valuable guys like this all over the place for the taking. We did see that your boy Jason Kipnis did get a job on a minor league deal, at least, so
minor league with the Cubs.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, teams seem to be picking those guys up eventually and kind of either stashing them as sort of a fourth man in the outfield or as the backup at an infield position or just sending them to, you know, AAA and having them there for backup. So it's kind of a weird time for guys in that sort of journeyman class. But, yeah, if you can play a bit, you know, you're still going to find a job one way or the other. So, I was glad to see Kipnis, you know, at least it isn't over for him. He'll still have a chance to contribute. And, yeah, Maven's coming off, you know, one of the better years of his career. So, who knows what he might have to offer.
Yeah.
Beyond that, like, any other kind of stories standing out from you so far? All the spring training coverage that's going on? Anything kind of catch your eye or just make you laugh? Anything great going on?
I like that we're already into like peak Guardy antics. I think it was Matt Boyd. Somebody hooked up his chair so that when he sat down, an air horn went off.
It was the aforementioned Alex Wilson did that. Yeah,
it was Alex Wilson. Yeah, there we go. Willie Wilson. Yeah, I thought that was pretty delightful. I really like that Tigers PR, not PR, but their social media department is really picking up their game this season. They've got a drone. So they've been harassing Chris McCoskey apparently with that drone, which is also delightful. Picking up some kind of cool overhead video, and they've been pretty on the ball about sharing, you know, some cool stuff out of spring training, which I think hasn't always been, the best, but I mean, props to Tiger social media because they've consistently been pretty solid, even when the team hasn't been great. So it's kind of cool to see all that. And it's good to see that the young guys are out there. I like to see Casey Mize was there first thing, you know, and he's looking good, even if they're taking it easy on him to start out with.
Yep. Yeah, seeing the young guys like, yeah, him and Manning and, you know, Fiedo, Scoobel, all those guys, Isaac Paredes, Dez Cameron, there's a lot of guys in camp right now. They've pretty much got, like, the whole top 10 of the prospect list, if not more. And, yeah, it's just kind of nice to see those guys all mixing in together. There's been some comments from, like, from Ron Gardenhire and some of the more veteran players, you know, about just looking back over your shoulder, and you can see all these guys are right there, you know, flashing really, really good stuff. Probably could outpitch most of the guys, frankly, on the roster already, a lot of those guys. So, yeah, you know, it just kind of gives you that sense that we are at least nearing a new stage where those guys are going to start making their way up. And having them in camp and just that sort of energy, like hearing stories from like Joey Wentz about, you know, he's living with Matt Manning and Jake Rogers, and how, you know, from the minute he got there, it's just been like one long Super Mario Kart tournament. and that's what they do. And Jake Rogers giving quotes about how he's a dry bones man and all this kind of hilarious stuff. So, yeah, you know, just like having the kids around. And, you know, kind of their somewhat wide-eyed nature about all this is pretty cool to see. Definitely makes the wait for actual games go down a little bit smoother. So that's all been fun and entertaining content.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's nice to kind of see those fresh faces and the excitement that still exists, right? Like, it's definitely a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it can just be rough when you have too many veteran players in the team and you're bad, and there just isn't a lot of, like, guys coming out to make their name. You know, you've got a lot more guys just kind of hanging on the past couple years. So, yeah, just the vibe in general from all that has been pretty good. I guess, it was Alex Wilson who did that to Gardy, and then Gardy was saying that he was going to – this is a college football rivalry, I think, between Texas A&M and maybe Arkansas for Alex Wilson. But I don't know, Gardy was talking about stapling these gigantic bullhorns onto the front of his motorhome. So I'm hoping that goes down.
No.
Yeah, if he could bolt those onto the front of that, that'd be great. I could see Alex Wilson actually kind of being all right with that generally, apart from the college part.
Hopefully his wife and kids aren't anywhere near him for that part of it. Oh, dear.
Yep. Yeah, and we had the yearly like launch angle argument on Twitter earlier today because, of course, Victor Reyes was given quotes about, you know, letting the power come to him and, you know, how he's not going to try to hit for power and he's not going to try to hit home runs. So, of course, Chris McCroskey has to roll out the quotes from Leonis Martin about how trying to hit the ball in the air was screwing him up in 2017, and then he came to Detroit and flattened his swing and was way better, and on and on. But of course, when he fixed the swing, what actually happened is that he hit way more fly balls and had the best first half of his entire career. So we just keep coming back to this argument over and over again about launch angle and whether or not your swing should be flat or slightly inclined and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, that argument's going to continue going on, but it really doesn't matter in Victor Reyes' case because the problem there is that he just doesn't hit the damn ball hard enough. We've got the evidence. You know, we know what his average exit velocity off the bat was, and it was like 85 miles per hour last year, which is well below major league average. So the launch angle thing is cool, but you have to hit the ball hard first. And if you're a guy who, like Avi Garcia, who hits a ton of, you know, rocket ground balls and liners, yeah, that's the kind of guy you would love to see kind of add some more fly balls. But you do have to hit the ball hard to begin with, so I just don't know. I don't know if Victor Reyes has enough in the tank there, but we'll see. I guess he's starting to run out of time, right? He's 24 now. We've had him for a couple of years. Gotta make something happen.
The clock is ticking.
Mm-hmm. Had a pretty decent second half last year, so we'll see if he or Jacoby Jones can take a step forward and kind of seize the role full-time in center field. But yeah, all in all, not a whole lot to look forward to, maybe, from those two guys. I don't know, Isaac Paredes is in camp, and it's good to see him hitting off those guys, taking live BP against some of the Tigers pitchers and stuff like that and doing well. He's a guy that we might actually see this year, hopefully, take over at third base at some point. Or maybe not, hopefully, because it would be ideal if Jamer Candelaria would just hit the snot out of the ball. But
it would be nice if he could live up to those early expectations, yeah.
Yeah, those first 2 months were really pretty darn good. Yep. And we just haven't seen it since. So there's somebody to hope for. But then there's also just been, there's been a whole bunch of interesting tidbits. Matt Manning is out there working on a slider now, and that intrigues me greatly. I was stoked to see that kind of development. Apparently he's just kind of getting started with it, but we've kind of been talking about him developing a slider or a cutter, one of the two, for a long time. So not that he necessarily needs it, but cool to see that he's still kind of working on developing some new pitches. He kind of took over from Casey Mize this offseason as a bunch of different sites finally just put him number one on the Tigers list instead of Casey Mize, following in my footsteps finally. And
you were the trailblazer there. Absolutely. You've been Matt Manning's stand one.
Yep, from day one. So, yeah, we've got all that kind of going on, and that's all been fun. But, of course, let's see. Actually, let's take a quick second, because there was something else I want to talk about. Where is it? There's another article.
Yeah. Well, we're finally full squad, which is nice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we've got the full squad has shown up, but we also had the Alan Trammell story, which may be.
Oh my God! Yes, that was so good.
Yeah, this is the kind of story you get from the off season when you have like old ball players out running around together.
Well, and it also reminds you that it is still winter, because when I first heard the story that Alan Trammell came up to camp today, but he was wearing a boot because he had a snowmobile accident, I was like, what? And then I looked outside my window and I'm like, right, it's definitely still winter. But I loved that poor Guardy was just like, I blame Gibby. Because apparently, I guess, Tram was out snowmobiling with Kirk Gibson and they let Tram lead. But he is not, an experienced snowmobiler by any stretch of the imagination. And according to Guardy, he went, like, straight into a stop sign.
Yeah, like, could not turn and somehow, like, yeah, missed a sharp turn and went off the trail and somehow broke his fibula, which is just not great.
No, not fun.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that story in detail now, because I want to know, like, how they got him out of there. Like, did he just, I mean, it's Alan Trammell, maybe he just like, hey, I'll be fine, you guys, and then just rode the rest of the way in, but I don't know. I'm envisioning them having to lash a whole bunch of, you know, like, pine boughs together and then drag him on this thing down
just
the trail.
Kirk Gibson carrying him out like a damsel in distress, just, like, through, like, 5 feet of snow. Yeah.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
And the, you know, the other thing about Miguel Cabrera is that we hear this every year, and I'm so used to just being super skeptical about the Miguel Cabrera has lost weight stories, but he actually does look kind of lean. For once, it actually seems like maybe it's true that he got himself a chef and, like, you know, changed his diet and took out the carbs and slimmed up a little bit.
Maybe a conversion of fat into muscle kind of situation, because I definitely saw a post listing his official weights for like the past 8 years, and it was like 240, 240, 240, 240, and then it jumps up like the last 3 years, like 249, 249, and then this season also 249. So I feel like, yeah, I agree with you 100%. He looks great. And it's not the first season he's come back looking really good. And so I think it was maybe 4 years ago or so he rolled into camp and I'm like, damn, Miggy looks great. So I'm hoping it's just like he really decided to like bulk out and like just really focus on his health, because yeah, apparently his actual weight has not changed much, but he does look really good.
Yeah, and I don't know, and I'm suspicious about that post too. Like, who was it? I think that was Evan from MLive posted that, but it's like everyone's around camp saying like, yeah, it's great and he lost a bunch of weight, but then you post the listed weights and he hasn't lost any weight. Like, I'm not really sure what to make of any of this. All I know is that he looks a little leaner. Yeah, that's all I can say.
Weight is such an irrelevant measure, right?
Like, it is. It's not just the weight, yeah.
It's like, because if you're really muscular, you're going to be a big, heavy guy, too. I mean, nobody's really looking at these 249-pound baseball players and thinking to themselves, that guy's fat and he's not athletic at all. Like, I swear to God, I think about 75 pounds worth of Miguel Cabrera is just in his forearms.
Yeah.
So
he does have some sizable forearms. That's true.
Ridiculous.
Oh man. And then yeah, we had another kind of interesting story, which was, and I don't have all the details because I think this was the Lakeland Ledger that reported this and they've got it all blocked out, but you can go hunt for this online if you're interested. But I guess the Ted Williams Museum donated a really nice copper statue of Ty Cobb to Joker Merchant Stadium, I guess, generally, and they've got it there with like a plaque, and it's like a full-size, you know, replica type statue, and looks pretty awesome. But I thought that was kind of a cool little addition that they had apparently mixed in there.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, I guess there's
I hadn't
Ted
heard
Williams,
that at all.
Yeah, there's a Ted Williams Museum in St. Petersburg at the Trop, I guess. That's what
yeah, oh,
is
there
saying.
Is. I've been
okay.
there.
And I guess they were the ones who donated it. So that was pretty cool.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of a neat little...
That's very cool.
In the tidbits category.
We should pester some of the local reporters to take pictures of it if they can find it, because I'd like to see that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but we've had... let's see, what else has gone on? We've had Gardy talking a little bit about the bullpen. Oh, I'm sorry. You weren't done. Keep going.
I was just going to say we could make Jason Beck earn his dollars. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, we should have him track down the story there for sure. Yep. Yeah. But yeah, and then Gardenhire was talking a little bit about the bullpen and talking about Joe Jimenez and Buck Farmer as sort of his closer and setup man. But they also have Gregory Soto and Jose Cisnero both in camp, and both of those guys pitched in the Dominican, Winter League last year, or just recently, like over the last few months, and have both come into camp, I guess, you know, in they're just much closer to mid-season form than anybody else is there. And I guess both of them have been touching 98 and looking really good so far. So that's been kind of a good sign. Like, that's going to be one of the key things, I think, to watch this spring. There aren't a whole lot of roster battles that really seem particularly compelling, but who wins those spots in the bullpen is going to be key. So seeing those two guys in there and really impressing everyone, it kind of seems like they have the early advantage over, like, David McKay or... maybe some of the other young guys, or like a converted starter, like maybe Kyle Funkhauser or even Bo Burrows if they decided to go that route. So, yeah, we'll just have to see kind of how those things all shake out. Nick Ramirez is in camp, and obviously he was our kind of dedicated, I don't know, like semi-long man, semi-only lefty reliever.
Without Hardy now, they need to have somebody like that in the pen, so it'll be...
Yep. Yeah, so he seems like he's going to get a shot, and apparently he went home for maternity leave today, or paternity leave, excuse me.
There we go, I was going to say paternity leave. That would be very progressive of the Tigers.
I know, they're very progressive.
Bringing a pregnant woman into pitch.
Hey, if she's got the arm, I don't care, you know.
Yeah, man, hey, no shade.
Don't mess with mama.
I would be very impressed to watch like a 9-month pregnant woman throw relief. That would be amazing.
Yep. Like,
that woman would deserve an MVP trophy.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, I mean, nothing really of super big note coming out of spring camp so far. We had Joey Wentz had like a little bit of forearm tightness, but they're saying it's nothing. So hopefully that's the case. But other than that, like Franklin Perez being there and just throwing baseballs and feeling healthy and good, is a huge, huge sign in the right direction. We'll
his
see
arm
how...
is going to fall off in
yeah,
weeks.
I know. I mean, I'm just not going to buy it until, you know, he gets like 15, 20 starts under his belt. But, you know, for now, we'll have to take it and hope that that's not all just a bunch of sunshine they're blowing there. He says he feels great, says the offseason did a lot for him, having a lot of time off, so... since we don't really know what the hell's going on or what's been wrong with him in the first place, I guess we'll just have to take that and hope, because man, if he could come back and get it together, that would be huge. So we shall see. But
a
yeah,
minor baseball miracle.
Yeah, just a little one. That would be helpful.
The Tigers can use all the miracles they can get.
Yeah, when you think about Franklin Perez coming back and then pairing him with Skubal, Fieto, Mize, and Manning, I mean, it is really tantalizing just to think of how many good arms that is. Like, there just isn't another team in the game that has that much pitching talent assembled in the minor leagues. There are definitely farm systems that are better because the Tigers are so far behind with hitters, but it's nice to have all that pitching coming. It's just that, yeah, like, on this timetable, like, when do we get the damn bats? When are you guys
are we going to focus on a true infield? When are we going to look at maybe who our real third baseman of the future is, or, you know, settle on some variety of a shortstop? But, you know, that's just questions.
Yep. Or, yeah, try to find, you know, players that actually still have some team control, or, you know, signing guys to multi-year deals of some sort. But
yeah,
that's not the way it's going to go this year. But overall, you know, with Romine's scope, Crone and Victor Reyes, or Cameron Maven,
Victor Reyes, there you go.
In there. Yeah, I mean, you know, at least there's a little bit more depth. There's a little bit more frontline talent in a guy like Crone. And yeah, overall, I mean, you just don't know. I guess we're a little early to start giving our predictions, but do you feel like there's any chance the Tigers could, at least if the pitching is healthy, if the pitchers stay healthy, could the Tigers hang around in the first half and at least kind of be vaguely in it, like almost 500-ish? Do you think that's even a possibility?
No.
I kind of do.
I'm so sure.
Like, I'm definitely not gonna...
I, the Tigers. I feel. I'm here to be pleasantly surprised, but at the same time, I'm just like, if the Tigers win like 68 games, I'll be over the moon.
Yeah, that's about right. I think I was guessing at 63 or 64 the other day, and that's probably where I'm gonna end up landing. But
yeah, 65 feels realistic. 68's my stretch.
Yeah, it's just that it's baseball, and crazy shit can happen. Like if the Tigers have a couple of injuries, like to the right people, they might actually be better off. You know, frankly. Like, you know, if Jordan Zimmermann goes down in May and you decide to call up, you know, Mize or Manning or somebody like that, you know, that could actually go well. I don't expect the Tigers to be very aggressive promoting those guys, that's for sure. But if someone's actually injured and you have a whole hole in the rotation, that might actually be more of an opportunity than a problem this year. So I kind of said that last year, thinking that we had, you know, Turnbull and Burrows and Funkhauser all in our back pocket, and none of that worked out. So
Turnbull,
the same thing can happen this year.
Fantastic in his rookie season, though. Like, yeah. I mean, you can't hold the losses against him. He did a sensational job for his first year.
Oh, for sure.
So
he was good. It was just that I thought we had him, like, back. You know, like, we were going to be able to have him at Toledo, so if somebody else went down, we'd bring him up, and instead they had so many injuries. Yeah, he was right in there from the beginning. But you're right, he did have an excellent rookie season, and everybody should be pretty excited to see him again this year, I would say, and see if he can kind of build on that a little bit.
He looks like he's in really good shape in spring training, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got.
Yeah, and I mean, the dude has the reddest beard I think I've ever seen. I mean, it's
such
red.
A red beard.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Very Viking-esque.
Yeah, I'm not even sure peak Justin Turner could compete in terms of redness. Though length and fullness, of course, certainly.
Girth of the beard on Justin Turner is more impressive, but the copper glory of Spencer Turnbull's beard is definitely the winner, I think.
Yep, it's pretty fantastic. So, what was the other note that I wanted to just toss out there? Oh, you know, another thing that came up from the pitchers was that Tarik Skubal had been out at Driveline Baseball in Seattle this offseason and working out there. That always feels good, just to know that you had a guy, you know, take the offseason that, you know, it's super serious, go to a place like that where there's, you know, state-of-the-art equipment and training. And, you know, obviously there are plenty of other places you can go. Daniel Norris goes to that P3 performance place. There's a whole host of options nowadays, but Driveline being kind of the key innovator and now the unofficial guru central for the Cincinnati Reds with Kyle Boddy and Trevor Bauer both there. It's just good to know that, yeah, Scooble, you know, didn't kind of sit on his laurels and think I had a good season. He went out there and worked with Matt Boyd and worked on some new things there. And we've already had some reports that his curveball is showing signs of being even tighter than it was last year. And if he gets one good breaking ball, everybody is fucked because, wow, that fastball was good last year. Holy smoke. So we've got that. We've got, what was the other sweet tidbit was that Jake Rogers spent the offseason working with Doug Lotta. Doug Lotta is a hitting coach who basically just had like his own kind of little school. But he worked with like Marlon Byrd and I think Daniel Murphy kind of at the beginning of the fly ball revolution era. And he was one of the key kind of independent teachers who was really sort of pushing guys to free them up to look to drive the ball in the air more. Justin Turner went and worked with him, and that's kind of that tandem kind of produced his breakout. So he's got a really good reputation, and I thought it was great that you know, Jake Rogers took that on himself to go work with someone like that and try to smooth some things out. It looks like he's cut down his leg kick. And the other cool thing I thought was that Joe Vavra, who is now the Tigers hitting coach, he was like the quality control coach the past two seasons.
Yeah,
but he's been a hitting coach before, and he's taken over from Lloyd this year. And he was in communication with Jake Rogers and Doug Lotta while they were working together, watching film.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good sign that there was a collaborative effort that went on there, and it wasn't like, oh, he went to this outside coach to learn stuff. Yeah,
because that would be my initial thought. Like, if you go to this outside coach, is it going to mess up the kind of philosophy of your internal Tigers coaching? Is it going to conflict with what you've already gotten from that higher level training with the team? But if it sounds like they're working together, I mean, obviously, if you're a hitting coach for an entire team, there's a lot to think about. So if you can have somebody spending all that one-on-one time with a guy who may not yet be ready for the major leagues, I think it's probably really helpful. And I think that was really where Rogers is lacking. So for him to know that about himself and to see where he could improve and to do it with the blessing of the team, I think that's great.
Yeah. 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 I mean, he said, you know, he feels so comfortable with the leg kick that it's just going to take a lot of work to make it comfortable without it. But yeah, it was just kind of a necessary adjustment. Like, Jake Rogers has a lot of raw power. Like, I think if you think of, like, what would be the ideal outcome for Jake Rogers, and it would be some kind of, like, Alex Avila-ish type hitter where, he strikes out, but he does walk plenty and hits for a ton of power. And all that seemed designed to help him just make, you know, more hard contact, and hopefully that won't really sap any of the power at all. But, yeah, just a good sign there. Joe Vavra's job, basically, as quality control coach was to be the liaison between the analytics department and the front office and the coaching staff. So it kind of makes sense that he would be more open to collaborating with a lot of different philosophies and styles. And I think that speaks well of him as a coach because, you know, it's just never a one fit all or a one size fits all kind of a thing. And having someone who's willing to, you know, bring in different perspectives and be open to all that, I think is the best kind of coach, especially in this era when there's so much more information that can clutter up hitters' minds. There's so many more people, it seems like, starting up little hitting camps or little pitching camps who do or do not necessarily know what they're doing. But yeah, all a good sign to bring in some outside help or to go seek outside help for some of the players. So yeah, those are all some of the feel-good stories I've noticed over the past week, at least as we get things underway here. How long do we have until when do they play? Are they playing Florida Southern this year? Didn't they skip that game last year?
They didn't do it last year. They did a different team last year. And then, of course, it's escape. It's a different, like, Southern Florida something or others. Hold on. Let me tell you.
Yeah, it might even have been a high school team instead of a college
team. It was
team.
Not.
No, it was college?
It was not. It was college level.
That they were sort of even a lower tier. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely different. It was not Florida Southern, which is a real shocker, I think. February 21st is Southeastern University.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep. And so, starting up with the Phillies on Saturday. Although none of
on
these...
On the 22nd, yeah.
I don't think any of those are going to be broadcast yet.
It's not until, I think, the very beginning of March that we're going to start seeing them air, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like, we might get a radio broadcast, but yeah, you're not gonna see anything until
Oh, let's. Sorry. Speaking of that, Let's talk about the A's for a second.
The A's?
Okay. The Oakland Athletics are phasing out radio broadcast as of the next season.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. They're pushing it in as like, oh, you know, it's okay because through the app this is available and blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, whoa, guys, that's, I mean, for starters, radio is one of those things that makes the game more accessible.
Yeah.
And it makes it easier for people who may not, you know, live and breathe internet to get access to the games. And it's how, you know, so many people, I think, grew up falling in love with the game. And so, I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about, I don't listen to games on the radio, but I have in the past when video wasn't available and that was my only alternative. And it just, it's crazy to me. Like, I still can't process the idea of just not having a team radio option.
Yeah, it's just odd. Like, you'll still be able to hear the games. Like, there's still some kind of a broadcast. But, yeah, it's only through, like, what do they call it? A's Cast?
Yeah, A's Cast is what it's called.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you can still stream it. But, and I guess this is the way it's going to go. Like, we've all been kind of talking about, like, a lot of, you know, I know a bunch of people in bands, a lot of friends of mine are musicians or at least music obsessives, and it's kind of been a topic, like, how much longer is you know, kind of commercial radio at least going to be able to go on, as opposed to, you know, just competing with, like, Sirius XM, you know, maybe college radio will still keep things going, but other than that, yeah, streaming broadcast is going to be... gonna be the way we're going, I guess. And I don't know, it's interesting to see the Rays kind of make that move first. I just wonder if it isn't because they've always sort of felt second fiddle, you know, like in the Bay Area on the radio. I would imagine that the Giants get priority. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, it's hard to say because you're right, it is a tight market. Side note, without dwelling on it, the Giants have agreed to raise salaries for their minor league players a season earlier than the rest of MLB.
Oh, that's interesting. And actually, that's a topic I'd like to get into as well, yeah.
Yeah, they just announced that today. So all sorts of interesting things happening out of the Bay Area today.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how to feel about the cutting of the radio thing. I know it is a sign of the times, but at the same time, it's a bummer.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good at all. I mean, I definitely would agree with that. Like, it seems strange just to even contemplate it.
Like, I try to think of it for the Tigers, and I can't imagine a season without Dan Dickerson calling.
Oh, it sounds awful. I mean, if you want to put Dan Dickerson on the TV broadcast and then just, you know, stream that, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's such a tradition here, especially maybe we have a different viewpoint just because Ernie Harwell is such a legend. But yeah, it doesn't feel good. Doesn't feel like the kind of thing where it's like, oh, we're in an awesome new era. Feels like we're in a more restrictive and pipelined new era where you have to, all the team's content is all going to be, you know, available only through the team. You know, they don't want partners, you know, they want to control everything and profit off everything and not really have any sort of, you know, secondary pieces and players involved. I've been kind of waiting for someone to do that. I mean, obviously the Yankees with the Yes Network, but it does feel like we're going to end up at that point where they're not broadcasting, you know, on TV anymore. This might be a ways down the road. I don't know when cable television's finally going to totally just collapse and give in to streaming and you know, all the different Netflix, you know, whatever you got, Roku, whatever you want. But it seems like, you know, sometime in the next decade we're probably going to be heading that way, and it all just feels like a new, different forms of consolidation, more so than, you know, like, I don't know, any advantage to the fans, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like another way for teams to make money.
Yeah. You know, another interesting way...
Ain't that what it's all about?
Yeah. And another interesting way that the teams might be making money is that it seems like... I don't know how long this has gone on, but apparently, like, most of the minor league rosters are now available in MLB The Show.
Yeah! Oh, yeah!
Yeah. So all these guys' likenesses are being sold and used by the major leagues, but I don't think there's any compensation still coming out of that for them.
Oh, I sincerely doubt it.
Yeah. Which all is just to lead into the next topic, which and somewhat undercut it, because we've kind of had this conversation going for a couple years now about minor league pay and about the fact that, you know, prospects are now, you know, the hotness compared to what, you know, covering minor league baseball or top prospects was like even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's such a, you know, a popular part of the game to track those guys. You know, those guys are of interest to people far more than they used to be. And you would think, you know, that that would allow them to parlay some more money out of their likeness being used, and their popularity and their jersey sales and all that kind of stuff. But instead, and I'll give MLB some credit, at least this is something, but we're going to raise minor league salaries for the 2021 season. And as Ashley just said, the Giants have committed to do it this season, which this is pretty cool. But rookie and short season ball pay is going to go up from $290 a week to $400 a week. This is only in season, of course. You don't get paid in the off season. Single A is going to go from $290 a month to $500 a month, or I'm sorry, a week. Double A is going to go from $350 a week to $600 a week, and Triple A from $502 a week to $700 a week. These are not, you know, they're substantial increases in a sense, but the pay has been so bad for so long that, you know, you look at like, you know, 20% increase, like that seems really good, but
yeah, but this isn't factoring really so in much. Stuff like clubhouse fees. I know the Giants said part of theirs is that they'll also help pay for housing, I think.
Yeah.
I would need to read deeper into it. And so that's a big thing. I mean, if housing is included and not being taken out as part of those wages, then yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
But I still, when you think about it, like minor pay, and these are like AAA players only getting paid $700 a week.
Yeah.
I mean,
to become a AAA level baseball player, you are one of the, you know, the top 1,000 baseball players on earth. You know,
yeah, like, so it's insane to me that like they could come up to the majors conceivably for like a week and make more in that week in the majors than they'll make all season in AAA.
Oh yeah, by far. Yeah, I mean, AAA they were getting $502 a week, and major league minimum for, you know, for players under team control is $550,000. Which is just kind of bad.
So for anybody who doesn't know how that works, you make whatever portion of the seat. Like, so it's not like you get paid $550,000 automatically, but if you work it out to whatever that is per game, the players would get that amount per game for the time they're up in the majors. So hold on. Let me do the math because I feel like doing it.
Okay.
You can't stop me. So let's say, I think it's like 556 or something, but let's say 553,000 is the average.
Yeah.
And we divide that by 162 games. So the average of that is $3,413 per game. So that's what those guys are making when they go up to the bigs for a week.
Yeah.
And that is by far, like, I mean, it's maybe not what they would make in a whole season, but it's huge.
Yeah, because even at AAA, I mean, $502 a week over a, you know, 23-week season, I mean, it's like $12,000.
Like, yeah, which is still below the poverty line. It's insane.
Yeah, and some guys seem to have, you know, different deals, because I know a lot more guys at AAA actually make a more reasonable salary, like make like $35,000, $40,000 a year. But it doesn't come out of just that. You know, a lot of that is presumably stuff that was worked out, you know, in contracts and in bonuses. Again, it's still like the higher tier players having some leverage to negotiate those kind of things. I don't want to, you know, take a giant crap on this because it's great. Like these are really, really substantially sized raises. If you look at the, you know, just go by percentages, but the pay was just so low to begin with that, you know, it'll make an impact and that's cool, but there's definitely still quite a ways to go. And my fear is that if we add up all this increased pay, what you will find is that the league intends to save almost that exact amount by cutting the 42 teams that Rob Manfred
wants to cut. Literally what I was just about to say. Yeah. It's not that they're being suddenly super generous. It's that they plan to shut down quite a lot of what they're paying for, and they're just kind of shuffling that money over.
Yeah, I don't really think there's any, or at least there's very little extra commitment coming here from Major League Baseball owners to pay their guys better. They have just decided that they will take that bottom tier of guys and just get rid of them.
Which kills me because it isn't even a bottom tier. Like we're talking about how the Tigers could lose their Double A team.
We'll still have a Double A team. It's just that it won't be Erie.
But that's what kills me. You're not just scrapping your like short season A class.
and these little rinky dink stadiums in all over Florida. It's like
I think one of the things Manfred said is that the reason they're cutting some of them is because the stadiums aren't up to par or they're in bad shape. But like the stadium in Erie is like undergoing upgrades as we speak and is absolutely up to MLB standards. It's BS is what it is. And they just want to cut spending.
Yep, that's really what it is. And I kind of wonder, like, if Major League Baseball thought they were going to get a little bit of good press out of this, like, in the midst of, you know, just the ongoing fuckery of the Astros situation. But this just got subsumed because it just won't stop. Like, on a daily basis, like, Rob Manfred seems to give new and somewhat contradictory statements about what's going on, about what he wants, and I don't know.
Or the Astros themselves are busy putting their feet in their mouths. Like, Carlos Correa needs to stop.
I know, but it's just funny with Carlos Correa, because everybody wanted detail. Like, everybody's screaming at the Astros, get up there and talk, you know, tell us what really happened then, if you guys, you know, blah, 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 if you want forgiveness, or, you know, for us to move past this. And then, so then he did, and everybody just was furious.
Well, because he's lying, that's why.
I don't know that he's lying.
He didn't want to take his jersey off. I think he's lying.
Yeah, but that's fine. But the thing about the tattoo, which everybody immediately flipped out about, like, he had the tattoo. Like, the problem is that we've gotten into the point where no one can believe anything, and so the conspiracy theories are flying as thick and fast as, like, accurate criticism of the situation, I'm afraid. That's all.
I'm sorry, but, like, a script tattoo that says Melanie or whatever on it is not so embarrassing that you need to, like, not have your jersey removed. And it certainly wouldn't have been unfinished. Like, I'm not a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
But I have had several large-scale tattoos and small ones, and the idea that a single script tattoo would take more than a single session is absolutely... no, not even a remote chance. A single color, black and gray, script tattoo, you'd be in and out in an hour and a half tops. So unless Jose Altuve has zero pain tolerance, there's no way that tattoo was unfinished.
Well, it's not that it was unfinished, it's that it was jacked up, apparently.
I mean, like, you see it now, and it's literally just it's not a cover-up.
I know, it's just a curly writing of his, daughter's name. With a heart.
Tattoo of a name, like, it's I cast doubt. Let me roll a natural 20.
No,
that was nerdy, and I'm so sorry.
That's awesome. No, I mean we should be skeptical of it all. I mean, there's no way not to be, but I don't know, like, the buzzer thing, I wonder about, because if they were already using buzzers, like, if they had taken it to that point where they had gotten past the trash can and set up a buzzer system, What is there possibly to stop them from just doing that this year?
Yeah, I'm also dubious of the buzzer scandal. I think the whole he had a jacked up tattoo is a filthy lie.
That's fine. I can see that.
I think it's absurd.
Yeah, and of course, Carlos Correa came out and said, that it wasn't, like, Tony Kemp and Josh Reddick and Jose Altuve were, like, the three people who didn't use it. But then, of course, Carlos Correa also had to get all saucy and kind of go after Kurt Suzuki and Cody Bellinger. And it was impressive almost to see him lash out at people in the midst of his team's, like, utter fuckery, and be, like, mad and indignant about a few things. And on that score, it was like, that was a side where, you know, that part just went totally insane off the rails. And I was just like, oh, wow. I can't believe you're actually coming back at people this hard like this. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Although I think the big revelation that I thought was fairly interesting today was that Manfred basically indicated that the cheating may have continued into the postseason when it was previously indicated that it hadn't.
The 2017.
And then and then somebody was like, well, who indicated that? And he's like, oh, player statements.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, so the cheaters said that they did it. So they did it. That's cool. And then he's basically like, yeah, we probably should have done more, but we're not going to do anything more. So
yeah. And that's where it really got to the point that has just been driving me insane through this entire thing is that I won't say we all, but plenty of people saw this coming. Like as early as like when I started writing for Bless You Boys back in like end of 2014, beginning of 2015, it was already an issue because all of a sudden there were computer screens everywhere and tablets and players were talking about watching the game up in the, you know, right up the tunnel in the clubhouse, and there were TVs in the hallways, and guys, you know, coaches are walking around with tablets, and it was just immediately like, how is this not going to be used for evil? It absolutely will. And, you know, and Rob Manfred basically admitted today that, yeah, oh, well, we should have been more proactive about this. But I look at this the same way I look at the steroid thing, which is like, it seemed like everybody knew what was going on. And no one ever went to do anything about it, even after, like, publicly coming out and talking about this. And behind the scenes, Manfred sending all those letter out in 2017 saying, I guess, like, you know, we know some teams are using technology to steal signs, but we're not going to investigate any of it. And so stop. Which seems to be the message. Like, they didn't investigate it. They didn't stop anybody from doing it. They just send a letter out that, to my mind, is almost like tacit permission for anything that had gone before. Like, oh, well, we know you guys have all been breaking that rule, but come on now, it's time to stop. All of this has called Rob Manfred's character and ability to police the game and enforce the rules fairly. All of that is in massive question. Like, it's really hard to imagine him surviving this, except for the fact that the owners may just not care.
Love him. Well, when you in the past 24 hours, both Bernie Sanders and LeBron James call you out for being pretty much just a tool. It's not a great sign. It's not good for you. Okay, now everyone's talking about baseball, but I don't think this is what we had in mind.
Yeah.
Like, I joked today on Twitter, I said that one of the guys in my office who's like, it's like, we're in Canada, this guy is strictly a hockey fan. He comes up to my desk this morning with his coffee and he's like, all right, so Ashley, what's the deal with this Astros thing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, how much time do you have?
Yeah.
Because I gave him like the TLDR, but it still took me 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, player burner accounts and possible buzzers and all of these stupid statements, and it's a mess.
Yeah, and I'm getting that at work too, and it's striking because on the one hand, it also reminds me like how rarely people actually ask me about baseball, even though they know I'm the person to ask. And it also says that, yeah, this is the issue that is going well beyond baseball, and everyone is aware of what's going on and trying to figure out, you know, like, just how big a scandal is this? Like, is this, you know, people are trying to contextualize it, basically. Like, is this worse than steroids? Is it not as bad? Teams have always been cheating. Is this that much worse?
Well, people are also using
worse?
It as an excuse to, like, reissue Pete Rose into the sport. And I'm like, no, let's not get crazy here. Just because these cheaters aren't getting punished appropriately doesn't mean that previous generations of cheaters aren't getting punished appropriately. Like, we can't say, oh, the Astros aren't getting banned from baseball, so let's reinstate Pete Rose. Like, they're different things.
Exactly. The problem with Pete Rose is that he was betting on baseball, which affects outcomes of games. That At very least, the Astros were trying like hell to win.
I mean, you
can't take that away from them. They weren't throwing the games, but yeah.
No, Pete Rose wanted to win money. The Astros wanted to win a World Series. And neither one of them was right in what they did. But I think that ultimately the sins are very different.
Yeah. And it's just been this progression of Astros players. Like, you know, one day it was Verlander's turn to come out there and get, you know, just raked over the coals, and people bringing up, like, everything that's ever happened, everything he's ever said to criticize anybody else. Rightly so. Ooh,
he loves to criticize people on other teams.
Yep. And, I mean, it's just a tough thing because I appreciate that some guys at least are willing to speak out on, like, domestic violence and some of those things. And I don't really know what anyone could have expected a person in that situation to do when it then happens to their own team, other than say something. But the totality of his statements, there's just no way not to read all of this stuff and to look at the way he's handled this and not to feel like this is complete hypocrisy.
I think that the problem is because he's got a history of it.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at his takes on anything from PEDs to domestic violence to, like, cheating, if we consider PEDs to be cheating, which he has in the past suggested it is.
It is.
It gives an unfair advantage. But I mean, even when it was happening, and it was, so he was speaking out against D. Gordon, but when it was Johnny Peralta, not a word. When it would happen to other players when he was on the Tigers, who would get suspended for domestic violence, he'd be all over it. But then, you know, Roberto Osuna joins his team, crickets.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard to speak out against people on your own team. Like, I get it. There's a clubhouse mentality that needs to be maintained. You can't go talking crap about people on your team.
Or maybe it doesn't. Or maybe it doesn't need to be maintained, yeah.
But, like, maybe, like, you can come out, like, with domestic violence, maybe you can say, like, you know what, I can't speak to the people on my own team, but because of the changes in certain situations, I'm making such and such a donation to a domestic violence organization, and, you know, I can't, you know, I don't know what you do, but I don't think you go from making jokes at your Cy Young speech about how technologically advanced the Astros are to being like, oh, shucks, I should have said more. Like, you didn't care then and you don't care now.
Yeah.
You just don't like to be asked about it. And I think he's shown his character, and I think it's changed my opinion of him pretty drastically in the last year.
I think that's happened kind of to a lot of people. With him in particular. Not so much me, honestly, but yeah.
Yeah, you can love him away. He's one of the best pitchers.
One
of the best Tigers.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's all that, like, side to it. It's really just about, like about these issues. Like, I don't peg Justin Verlander as particularly egregious because he tried to do the right thing and then failed when it was his turn to be at, you know, to be on him. Like, when it was his team. It's not great, but I'm not super upset about it. Like, the Fennec thing was gross, especially. Like, that in particular kind of grossed me out because, you know, whatever happened in the clubhouse there, like, the pitchers weren't going to have anything to do with it. There's just no way, in my opinion, like, there's just no way, you know, a starting pitcher is going to stop the hitters from doing whatever it is the hitters are doing. But by the same token, like you say, like,
well,
you know,
and a starting pitcher who joined the season so late. But, like, because he did join at the end, like, the beginning of September. What are you going to do? But,
yeah,
I don't know.
I know. And the whole thing is frustrating because you almost have to, like, detail every bit of it to have a conversation with people. Because there's so many people just kind of rolling in, like, you know, just upset about the trash can. And it's like, I've said to a few people, like, signaling with the trash can is totally, totally legit. There's nothing wrong with that. And people, like, lose their minds about it. Like, what? That's not the problem. The only problem is the camera. And I want to bring this back to Manfred, because the very first thing that came out of his first, you know, report was this was a player-driven, you know, scandal. And he said that. And then the only things that happened was that the front office got punished with Hinch and Lunau getting suspended for a year.
And then fired.
Yeah. And probably Cora, Carlos Beltran, you know, coming under some scrutiny, but still, like, player directed, this was all player directed. And then you start to find out, like, Oh, that who was it? Jared Diamond at the Wall Street Journal got that memo about the Astros Codebreaker team, which was basically
in the dark arts.
Yeah, part of the front office was actually devoted to watching the film and decoding the signs. And so then you see, like, oh, okay, well, it was player-driven, but the front office was all up in this, like, 100%. They were the ones doing it. And then, as Manfred has explained, the reason he says he can't punish the players is because he had to give them, on the one hand, he had to give them immunity to get accurate testimony, and two, because general manager Jeff Luhnow, when they warned all the teams that they knew stuff was going on and that everybody needed to just knock it off right now if they wanted immunity, I guess, basically, didn't forward that on and just buried it. And so the players weren't, you know, notified. But it's just odd because it's not a rule. It wasn't a rule change. It was just like a notice that, hey, we're going to enforce this rule now.
Like, yeah, you should probably stop cheating.
Yeah, which brings all the unwritten rules versus the written rules crap to the fore. Like, there's just so much here that is opaque. It's just, it's hard to know where to start. I think that leads to people just being, like, flat out, like, furious. Like, you know, it's not even, this all started out where people could blame the Astros. Like, these guys, these couple players especially, like, this is the problem. And ever since then, it just keeps mushrooming to, like, why did MLB handle it this way? Oh, the Astros' entire front office seems like they were actually involved in this, and most of those guys are still working there. And then you've got the Red Sox, who, of course, had their own side to this scheme. And yeah. I don't know. And I'm just wincing because I just have a feeling that this is even far more widespread than people think it is. And I don't know if that part will ever come out, but I'm terrified that this is only going to get worse.
Well, I mean, this whole season, I mean, the Astros are pretty easy villains to make, considering just what a monstrous, like, debacle they have made of themselves this season between the whole Fennec getting barred thing, the Stephanie Epstein story for, like, Sports Illustrated, where they were basically like, nah, she's lying, instead of actually doing any kind of damage control to tell the truth. Which totally turned around and bit them. They lost their assistant GM because of it. And I say lost, but, you know, they're better off for it.
Right. Well, lost in the way you lose, like, a really bad, like, infection.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, all of that, and then this comes out, like, I'm mind blown by the Astros fans who are still able to defend every little thing that this club does. Because it's just a history of disastrous decision making.
Yep. And yeah, I mean, we've said this on the air here before.
And you can't, like, blame the players for all of that.
Right. It's true.
Like, it's a lot of that is management choices and front office choices. And yeah, okay, so the players were part of and one of the major driving forces of the sign stealing. But, like, the players didn't, you know, bring in that monitor on their own and pay a staff member to sit there and watch that video feed.
Yep.
Like, this was sanctioned.
Yep.
And it was allowed by everybody. And, yeah, it would be nice to see the players get punished for it because they were kind of the ringleaders. But nobody was down there saying, guys, this is both stupid and wrong. So,
yeah.
I think it's just, top to bottom, the entire Astros organization should just be scrubbed and started from scratch.
Yeah, it really does seem like this is just an absolutely systemic, you know, cultural problem with them. Like, maybe that's true in terms of the Red Sox. I don't know, maybe there's another team or two that you could say that about that we just don't know about. I have no idea. But what we do know, yeah, I mean, it just seems like everyone was involved all the way up. And it really feels like the league kind of knew about it and didn't and opted not to do anything about it. Like, well, I'll just send out an email. Like, hey, you guys, knock it off. Like, is this...
Wipe my hands, I'm done.
Yeah, like, is this serious or not? And it, you know, and it's easy to kind of pin it on Manfred or to pin it on the players or the Astros front office too, but, you know, the guys who are responsible for the game are the 30 owners out there. And, you know, I really, really wonder about the stewardship of the game, the way things have gone the past couple years. And this is just another example where it just feels like the only real concern is public relations. Like, that's really all they cared about. They didn't really care that that anyone was stealing until Mike Fiers, you know, kind of confirmed it and broke the story. You know, who knows what we might know? And then for Manfred to come out there and be sniping at reporters for uncovering stuff he didn't want them to know, like the Codebreaker team scandal part of it. Yeah, I mean, God, it's just all been so gross. I don't know. It's weird because I know it's attracting a lot of attention to baseball, but none of it's good. And I can't really imagine it being good for the game going forward, because unlike steroids, like, you know, you can institute testing for steroids, and then, you know, yeah, there are probably guys still using and getting away with it by using, you know, whatever, very small amounts, or by, you know, the wealthiest players having access to, like, the best, you know, sort of non-traditional medical care based on that kind of stuff. Like, but at least you have some kind of process. There's no way the fans are ever going to be able to say to themselves with certainty that no one is using cameras to watch, you know, watch for signs or to pick that stuff up, and it might be affecting the game. Like, there's just kind of no way to undo that fear, which is why I keep bringing up the dang, like, point that there should be no hand signs on the baseball field anymore. We should have found a way to move beyond that, and I hope they can, because, I mean, I don't know. I just don't even know kind of where to go right now with this, or I don't know if it's going to end. I don't know, like, if this is all kind of like an isolated thing, or if this was systemic. I don't know if anything that they've done so far has convinced anyone to stop, if anyone else was doing it. I don't know. I it's just all complete uncertainty and paranoia at this point. I don't know.
It's monstrous. I mean, obviously none of us were around for the Black Sox scandal, and I know most of us weren't around even for when the Pete Rose thing hit the wall, hit the fan, I should say. But I with the way that Twitter feeds this and the whole social media spectrum and how it just won't, I've just, nope. Okay, cool. Oh my God. I was going to sneeze and it just went away. Allergic to this bullcrap.
Yeah.
But like, I think that it's a whole new world of scandal, because the internet never forgets anything.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to allow these guys to forget what's happened. Like, there are days I go online and I feel for the social media team that runs the Astros Twitter account.
Oh yeah.
Cause you just, I just look at the way people are getting harassed over it.
Yeah.
The way that players are getting tormented about it. And it's a whole new world.
Yeah.
And the speed at which people are able to, like, snipe at each other and shit talk each other, pardon my French, I was so good up till then.
yeah.
But, like, to trash talk each other, it's astonishing how much different it is. And I don't think it's going to simmer down anytime soon.
No.
Because we just keep poking the bear.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel terrible for my Astros. People are just
saying stupid things.
Yeah. And going back and, like, searching everyone who is involved, you know, comments on Twitter, all their Instagram, like everything, like looking for, you know, for bait to be able to stir the pot, you know, a little bit more. So, and yeah, I mean, I feel terrible for a lot of my Astros follows who are really good fans and, you know, feel terrible about this and are just hating it, and who are also just getting lumped in with all the Astros fans who are now just basically at war with the world because they feel like, you know, whatever, like everyone's against them and blah, blah, blah. And then there's all the people who are literally are just against them. We're just hammering tongs at them all day long. And then the one proactive measure that Rob Manfred does decide to announce this week, and it's been a daily, you know, it's been like the daily fuckery with Rob Manfred. Like, you know, here's your update on, you know, how he's decided to piss everyone off today. comes out a couple days ago and talks about, you know, instituting new guidelines for hit by pitches and how there's going to be like a, you know, a really strict, maybe not quite like zero tolerance policy, but they're going to be way, way quicker to toss pitchers out of games, to issue suspensions, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, that's really the only proactive thing he's done. And of course, it's all obviously to benefit the Astros and to keep them from just getting, you know, headhunted and beaned all year, which just infuriated everyone to, you know, a whole nother level. Like, not only do they get to keep the title and, you know, their money and everything else, but now they also get special protection from getting hit by pitches too. I don't know.
I did get a laugh. I think my favorite tweet about that was somebody suggesting that all of the games that are against the Astros, players, like teams should just start with like a reliever opening the game who can like just wallop somebody with the first pitch and then get tossed. And then not only do they get to hit one of the players, they also get to bypass the three batter mandatory rule that's been instituted.
Well, I think that's a key point. Anytime you're facing the Astros and your reliever needs to get out of the game, just have him plunk somebody.
Yeah,
for sure.
Although our dear friend Nikki Hardy did have a very good point on Twitter the other day, which I liked, and she, as the wife of a pitcher, would probably know, where she's like, I see that it's not pitchers making these suggestions, because what pitcher in their right mind would want to give one of these cheaters a free base? Yep. And I'm like, I gotcha.
Yep, it's true. And I mean, I understand why people reacted the way they did, but I also kind of feel like that might be the one good thing he said. It's not going to work the way he came out and put it. But yeah, I mean, I do worry about that, because, you know, you look at the Astros and there's what, like maybe five or six position players who were really involved in this thing in 2017, 2018, whenever you think it ended, or 2019. And, you know, are pitchers going to be selective, or is it just going to be like, we're just going to come out there and just drill Michael Brantley or whoever else is available, you know? Yeah, I don't know.
No, I think it's going to be Bregman, man. Bregman's got to watch himself.
I guarantee you, Bregman, Springer, and Correa, and Altuve had better watch themselves. Yep, it's going to...
Yeah, they're going to get...
Oh, and Yuli. And Yuli probably deserves it.
Yeah, I'm not going to be so sad about that, because Astros fans are now like resharing and tagging Yu Darvish in like the racist gesture photos.
Yep.
And like Darvish, the king of Twitter that he is taking it in stride publicly. But like, nobody needs to be bombarded with crappy baseball fans sharing racist garbage at them all day. Like, as somebody who's already been punished by this whole thing because of what, like, the hit that his confidence took because of it.
Yeah, and like, reputation, yeah.
Yeah, and absolutely, his whole career could have been ruined because of it. It's hard enough for him to, like, find and maintain a position in baseball. Like, whoa, I get so mad on people's behalves.
I am pretty mad, like, on you, Darvish's behalf, but I've kind of been that way since it all went down, even before we knew that any of this might have been involved. Because, yeah, it just sucked how much the Dodgers put this on Yu Darvish to begin with, like Dodgers fans in general. Yep. It's been crap. Yeah, Yu Darvish is awesome.
He was so good about not blaming anybody at the beginning. He's like, no, I was the one who was bad. It was me.
Right.
And now you can see this in him where he's like, no, these jerks cheated. They did this to me. Like, he's definitely not blaming himself anymore, which I think is at least one positive thing.
Yeah, yeah. At least I do feel like he's been, like, fully redeemed and maybe more, with a lot of people looking to him like, oh, this is, you know, this is the guy who, more than anybody else, kind of took the crap for it. And, you know, I mean, the starts where he got blown up were on the road, and supposedly there was nothing involved at that point. So I don't even know how much any of that matters, but it's just been nice to see a correction, because, man, I love me some Yu Darvish. And yeah,
absolutely,
he's only continued to gain stature in my eyes over the past few years, the way he's handled all this crap. So, yeah, here we are. Spring training is here, and we're still relitigating the 2017 postseason. So I don't know when that's going to end. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it just feels worse
might
and worse.
Not.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what's going to happen with Boston, if anything, like what that situation's going to be. And that could just cause everything to blow up anew. So, like, who even knows anymore?
I know. Imagine the next year's World Series winner also was still stealing signs in 2018. Oh, Jesus. It'd just be a complete disaster.
Yeah.
And at the end of it all, I still don't even know. I still don't even know, like, how much I think it helped them. Like, it obviously did. I don't doubt that it helped them to some degree. But, we're just never going to be able to unpack it to figure out, like, you know, what should a guy have hit or whatever. All I know, and I've seen some other people say this too, is, like, if one of the Astros hitters wants to maintain their reputation, they better hit their ass off this year. Like those guys.
Yeah.
I saw Verlander say that too. Like, you know, the only way we're going to redeem ourselves is by proving we're as good as, you know, people thought we were that year. And like, yeah, I guess that's about it. You guys better go out there and play some goddamn impeccable baseball and just suck it up when your guys get hit, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that bugs me, I think, the most about it is that they really wore that badge of honor of being like the perfect rebuilding team, the smartest team in baseball about creating, you know, something from nothing and coming up from the bottom. And it's all crap.
Yeah,
like
the leadership, innovation.
Anything they did that was actually good is completely obliterated by this.
Yep. Yep. I mean, the reversal in reputation has been incredible.
Yeah, like, can we look at it now and be like, well, great, the, like, era of tanking that we're seeing right now is, I think, the Astros are partly responsible for that, because you have these teams looking to, like, bolster their farms and start the way the Astros did, and now what? Like,
yeah. Would that have worked?
Wait 2 years and cheat? Like, is what they're doing worth it now that they see how they really won that title?
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Yeah, kind of calls the whole program into question. So I don't know. I don't know how much longer, but we're gonna just have to keep putting this segment hopefully late in the show, because I want to talk
it's
Tigers.
It's just gonna keep happening.
I'm excited about the season. I'm excited about, you know, seeing a lot of the young guys come out and play, and that's my focus and that's what I want. But we're just not gonna get away from this. So it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to do it for this week. I don't know. I don't know if I can talk about the Astros anymore. I'm pacing now and I'm upset.
I'm ready for a nap now after that.
Sounds good. Yeah, I don't know. We're going to try to get a special guest or two together for you guys. I know I've said this repeatedly. We've had a couple things just not work out over the years. I was talking to Buck Farmer's agent recently. That one didn't come to pass, so... I don't know if we're going to get any players, but we do have a few ideas on that front. We might be able to produce an interesting guest or two before the season occurs. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I may be recording with someone you'll all be interested to hear from later on this week. And Ashley and I will be back next week. We will possibly try to get Rob Rojacki, our managing editor, involved at some point. I'd like to get Adam Dubin on and kind of hear a little bit about his time in Lakeland this spring, taking pictures.
Yeah, man.
Talking to players and seeing what goes on down there. So, yeah, we've got some plans, and we'll try to keep all that content rolling for you guys. And, yeah, looking forward to the season getting going. There's some interesting things coming up. The Tigers are going to play the Twins and the Dominican in about a week. That's kind of an interesting little, I don't know, like invitational matchup down there that'll go on. And yeah, before long, we should hear the dulcet tones of one Dan Dickerson on the radio, and weather getting nicer. Sounds great.
Summer is coming.
Yep. Yep. Give me baseball. Even if it's corrupted and monstrous.
Baseball, that's the thing. Like, just give me something to focus on other than the Astros. Like, although... I got to say, and I'm pretty amused by this, the first game I get to go to this year, because I'm doing an East Coast road trip, will be in Boston, and it will be the Red Sox versus the Astros.
Oh, that's awesome. Right in the crucible.
So that should be hilarious. I'll let you know if it explodes.
That should be fascinating, because, yeah, you know the Red Sox fans will give it to them left and right, regardless of the fact that the Red Sox may well have been doing all this.
It's going to be pretty early in the season. It's late May I get to go. So it should be intriguing.
Awesome. Yeah, that should be a good trip. Get yourself some East Coast, Eastern Seaboard seafood.
Oh, I'm going to eat so much seafood. Although people are telling me I'm not supposed to have oysters in the summertime.
Oh, really?
And I'm a little heartbroken about this news, that apparently you're only supposed to eat them in, like, months that end in, or months that have an R in them or something is the rule, and then, like, the summertime isn't great, but I've never had East Coast oysters. I'm like, no, I want to try them.
Yeah, you might have to do it anyway.
I might. I might just brave it. Like, they're not going to sell me poisoned fish.
Yeah.
It's probably just not as good as when they're in their, like, the height of their season.
Yeah, for sure. So. Or maybe they're more expensive or something. I don't know. Like, they're just less plentiful or something. But I don't know.
Yeah, could be. Anyway, I've had plenty of West Coast oysters. They're amazing. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Awesome. And yeah, later on in the fall, I will be taking my baseball stylings to Iceland and explore that fair country. So we're going to be out and about a little bit this year, which is good.
Yeah, trips in. I get to do opening day in London.
Oh.
Yeah. I will be in London, England for opening day this year. And somebody's told me that there is a baseball-themed bar there, like a MLB, like they sell official merch and stuff. And it's like a baseball-only bar in London. So I may have to go check that out for opening day and get my fix.
Have you talked to Joey, baseball Brit? You should see if he's...
And I think somebody tagged him in my plight, but he never replies to me. I'm a little bit miffed about it.
Oh, he's too big for us now. Okay.
He is. He's outgrown us. But the Tigers UK, one of the Tigers guys on Twitter, he mentioned the bar to me. He's the one who got the was it a Reyes tattoo last year?
He
did.
Victor Reyes tattoo. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So he's the one who told me about this baseball bar in London. So I'm pretty psyched to try that out and see what that's all about.
Oh yeah, that should be cool. Yeah, Jed lost a bet and got a Victor Reyes tattoo. So, and now he writes for Motor City Bengals. So
you can he sure does. I saw that today. That's kind of cool.
Yep, you can check out his stylings over there. Our boy Jay Markle is over there now. Roger Martin from Tigers Minor League Report is over there as co-expert. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what they've got going on over there. But yeah. That'll about do it for us this week. We'll be back next Tuesday or next Thursday or somewhere in that vicinity with a new episode. In the meantime, you can follow Ashley at 90 Feet From Home on Twitter, and you can follow myself at Fiscadoro74 on Twitter. And we will catch you next time. Ashley, have a good night.
Peace out.
Bye-bye.